We have a lot coming your way before we step aside at 7 o'clock, but first we do want to tell you that they have set the first pitch for Tennessee softball against Texas A&M. It's going to be right in that 6:32, 6:35 range. So Brian Rice will take over AM 990 for softball coverage at 6:20. So softball coverage coming your way on AM 990 at 6:20 as it's Tennessee and Texas A&M. Those two teams met back in March, first week of March, at the Reveille Classic since the Aggies weren't on Tennessee's schedule. Lady Vols won that game 3-2, and now we'll try and make it two wins over the Aggies this season. But Tennessee softball comes your way starting at 6:20 on AM 990. We will catch up with the play-by-play voice of the Arkansas Razorbacks at 6:15 as they arrive in town to take on Tennessee, number one Arkansas versus the number four Vols. And Jimmy, another local product who's playing this week in the Visit Knoxville Open, will be joining us later after Phil.
Yes, we look forward to Bogalarue joining us. He, like seven others, was a qualifier who had to shoot a great round and then survive a playoff to make it to the Visit Knoxville Open.
We'll catch up with him around 6:35, but right now it's your chance to win. It's the Sports Fix at 6. Jimmy, what is the wonderful prize that is up for grabs tonight?
Thanks to Ted Russell Nissan, we've got a certificate good for a complimentary oil and filter change and a tire rotation and a wash and vacuum service. Now, Ted Russell Nissan, they provide you with the tools that they hope will make buying a car easier. Their goal is to assist you in making a confident decision. No one can sell your Nissan for less than Ted Russell Nissan right there on Kingston Pike. Certificate good for a complimentary oil and filter change and a tire rotation and a wash and vacuum service. If you can answer this trivia question, we're just extending yesterday's question. We never got an answer, so we're going to fire it out again and see how we do with this one. All right, here we go. Steph Curry is trying to become the fourth NBA player to win multiple scoring titles, multiple MVPs, and multiple NBA titles. There are three players in NBA history that have done it. Name those three. Name the three NBA players that have won more than one scoring title, more than one MVP, and more than one NBA championship.
656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Let's start with Jonathan. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Jonathan.
I'm going to go with Kobe, Wilt Chamberlain, and Shaquille O'Neal.
You got one right. Your middle guess was on the mark.
Jonathan, we do appreciate it. Have a great night. Let's try Cody. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Cody.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing well. How are you?
Not too bad. All right. I'll guess. Wilt Chamberlain, Michael Jordan, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
There you go. That's it. Those are the ones.
All right.
Yeah, and in fact, two of those played center for the Lakers, Wilt Chamberlain and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Of course, Wilt played a lot of other places. Jabbar played a couple of years at Milwaukee, but a few years before going to the Lakers. So Wilt Chamberlain did it. Michael Jordan did it. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar did it, winning more than one scoring title, MVP, and NBA championship. Cody, congratulations. You've got a certificate good for complimentary oil and filter change and a tire rotation and a wash and vacuum service from Ted Russell Nissan. We're going to put you on hold and get that prize to you. Good job.
Thank you.
All right, way to go, Cody. And you should know this. You have just won the longest ever Sports Fix It 6 trivia question, coming in 4 minutes shy of 24 hours.
Yes, and we were taking questions the whole time. Guessers. Yeah. Yeah, that's the first time we ever had a run over. It was
that
amazing. I thought we were going to get to it, but we didn't. So, just a couple of notes I do want to share. The Lady Vols had their best performance of the NCAA regional up in the Louisville area. They shot a 1/289. It just wasn't quite good enough. They were 18 over for the tournament. They finished three shots out of sixth place. Sixth place advanced you to the championships, which would be a Greyhawk golf course in Scottsdale, Arizona. But So finishing 18 over, the first round killed them. They shot 11 over the first day, and they just weren't able to get there. But what a fantastic performance by Michaela Bardwell. The native of Texas shot a 66. Just incredible performance. 31 on the front, which included three birdies and an eagle, 35 on the back, and her 66 propelled her to a tie for second place. What does that mean? That means she gets an individual invite to the NCAA championship. So congratulations to Bardwell. She's only the sixth Lady Vol to advance to compete as an individual in the NCAA tournament. So the other scores were they just didn't get another really good score today. Whitson ended up with a 34 on the front and then a 40, so the 74. But they weren't able to count a score better than 74 other than Bardwell's 66. So the Lady Vols end their season. And here was something that was really bizarre. So they're down in Baton Rouge. They're playing an NCAA regional there. They had some weather conditions that concerned them. So the officials came out and announced to the players today, I guess it was today, the course is playable, but not at a championship level. Therefore, we're not going to play the tournament. The top six seeds will advance. The top three individuals will advance. And then you could hear the girls yelling, well, wait a minute, if it's playable, so what? Why can't we play? They were yelling at the officials who turned around and walked away. A bizarre situation. I don't know all the weather issues there, whether it was rain, whether it was wind that knocked trees over on the course, whatever it was, I don't know. But to say it's playable but not at a championship level, I don't blame them for being upset. But those players were ticked off. So that's what happened in Baton Rouge. One other quick note, Tennessee Sports Writers Association, their pitcher of the week, Tennessee's Blake Tidwell, who had a very strong performance in beating Missouri on Sunday. So Blake Tidwell, the Tennessee State Pitcher of the Week, as given by the Tennessee Sports Writers Association.
Jimmy, that's just, I think, so incredibly wrong with the situation in Baton Rouge. You would think that there would be some sort of contingency plan to perhaps have even another facility that might have been available to go and compete. Because just to say that the course is playable but not to a championship level, I think you should have some place where you might be able to pivot and let those teams compete rather than just saying, well, these six teams or the six higher seeds, they move on for sure. And I just think that is so incredibly unfortunate.
I do too. And I wonder what kind of repercussions there are. Of course, this might have been NCAA tournament officials who are the judge and jury, so there may not be any recourse for anybody. But I don't blame the participants for being upset with that. Look, they're all playing the same course.
Yes.
So what difference does it make? That's a very
Correct.
Unfortunate decision.
Really is. And before we get to our very special guest, do want to say that Hardin Valley Academy Baseball is presenting A Night with Pete Rose. That's coming up in the end of this month, around May 22nd. And what we've got is a pair of tickets to the fifth caller at 656-WINS. 656-WINS, caller number 5, will get a pair of tickets to see A Night with Pete Rose as presented by Hardin Valley Academy Baseball. 656-9467, 656-9467, that's 656-WINS, caller number 5, you will be our winner. And it is an extreme pleasure to, as we head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, to say hello to a gentleman who is the voice of Arkansas women's basketball and for more than a decade has been part of the call, if not leading the way, for Arkansas baseball. Phil Elson joins us now as the top-ranked Razorbacks are on their way to Knoxville to take on the number 4 Volunteers starting this Friday night at 6:30. Phil, how are you?
I'm great, John. It's good to talk to you. Hold on a moment, though, man. I may want to crack it that night with Pete Rose because I got some questions I'd like to ask him, if that's okay.
Fantastic. We can hold.
Great. Yeah, you take down my number, see if I can win those tickets, and then we can talk about the series maybe another time, okay? Cool.
Absolutely. We don't want to get in the way of your winning a great prize. But it's been kind of a prize campaign for Arkansas, even though there are six or more college baseball polls. The Razorbacks have been as close to a consensus number one this season as any team could possibly claim. What has it been like to watch this team compete the way it has in leading the Western Division and being tied for the top spot in the SEC here in week nine of the SEC schedule?
Well, I mean, it's been entertaining as anything. It's been thrilling and enthralling and dramatic, and I've never experienced anything like it. I don't know if these guys ever have either, because it's been 8 or 9 weeks that they've been number one in the country, and I mean, they've had nothing but winning weekends. It started with kind of a crazy weekend in Arlington, Texas, to open the season at the Rangers Stadium, and everything was delayed a day because of snow and all of that. They had a couple of comeback wins and won 3 games, and that catapulted them up. And ever since then, they've just done nothing but win games. And it's funny, on my show the other day, we were talking about the famous Meatloaf song, which now Arkansas has been on a string of 5 weeks in a row, where two out of three in college baseball is more than ain't bad, like Meatloaf saying. Two out of three in college baseball is freaking great. And they've done that 6 weeks in a row. It's been amazing. So they're a really good team in a lot of ways. I don't know if they're great in any way, with the exception of in the field. That, to me, separates them from any of the other teams that I've seen that I've covered here at Arkansas. They are legitimately a very, very good team in the field, especially at the positions you got to be good, up the middle, catcher, shortstop, second base, center field. And what's been interesting is they've been watching the guys at every other position have been learning positions this year, not on the fly, but this has been their first year at that position. And they've all become very good at those positions, too. So, yeah, I mean, they've got a great lineup. They hit a lot of home runs. They get on base. They've got a couple of pitchers that are really dominant right now and find ways to piece games together. They're great in the field. And to me, that separates them.
Phil, you mentioned the home runs. 79 leads the SEC. Was this expected to be a power-hitting Arkansas team?
Dave Van Horn said that this team, they noticed in the fall series that they had hit more home runs than any other fall that he'd remembered. So I don't think that they're surprised, meaning the coaching staff or the team in and of itself, of the power that they have. I think they might be a little bit surprised of just how diffused that lineup is throughout the entire, the power is throughout the entire lineup. It's really interesting when you look at them. They have all these great offensive numbers team-wise, but there really aren't a lot of guys that are amongst the league leaders, because they have 5 guys with 10 or more home runs. They've got 8 guys with 20 RBIs or more, 20 walks or more. It's just a very deep, deep lineup that's tough to pitch to.
And you mentioned tough to pitch to. Tell me about the pitching staff for Arkansas. See, the team ERA is right at 4, which ranks them about 6th in the league. Is that about what was projected for the Razorbacks?
I think they probably thought by now that there'd be a little bit more of an establishment of starting pitching, and that they would have maybe a little bit more confidence of depth in the bullpen, because the two pitchers that I'm telling you about that have been dominant, one is Patrick Wicklander, who's a junior left-hander from California, and he's become a very dominant Friday night ace in much in the same way that Isaiah Campbell was and that Blaine Knight were in the last few years. He hasn't walked a batter in 3 starts. He's pitching off his fastball, throws low 90s, got good arm action, good breaking stuff, mixes in a change, really competes, and spots that fastball where he wants to put it. He's become dominant. He is the second-best ERA in the SEC. And then there's Kevin Copps. I mean, I've never seen anybody have the kind of dominance that Kevin Copps has shown this year. And it's been out of the blue. It's not that he wasn't expected to be good, because he's been with the program now for 5 years. He was a very good freshman. He had to sit the next year because of elbow ligament replacement surgery. He had the Tommy John surgery.
He was good the next year after that when they went to Omaha in 2019, and last year in the pandemic shortened season, he had an ERA over 8. It was ugly. It was not pretty. And so this year he comes back, and he is unhittable. And he's become his own setup guy. He's like Raleigh Fingers was in the 70s, guys. He's throwing 3 to 4 innings, closing games. He's affecting 2 games on a weekend, not just with 1 inning, but with 3 innings per outing. Or like Dave put him out there in the last game of the last series against Georgia, and has him pitch the final 4 1/3 inning. And all he does is just go up there and throw cutters, curveballs, fastballs, changeups. He's got a starter's repertoire, and he's truly dominant. I mean, I don't know how you keep an ERA under 1, but his keeps getting lower. It's ridiculous.
Was it expected before the year that Arkansas could be a team that could contend for a number 1 ranking?
I guess so. It's sort of, yes. Yeah, there were just a lot of ifs. There were a lot of ifs. Because nobody really knew what you're getting into this season, because we didn't have enough of a sample from last year. There were a lot of ifs, especially in the pitching staff, and there still are. Nobody really thought that the lineup would be quite this deep. We knew they would be good in the field. But here's the thing, when you play in the SEC and you play the sort of schedule you're going to play against, you'll always have an opportunity to become a number 1 team if you win the games that are in front of you. I didn't think they would be 17-7 in the SEC right now. I'd be lying if I told you yes. I know how tough this league is. I wouldn't have thought they'd won their first 8 series. So, I mean, I have a little bit of surprise in it. But now that I've been watching it for 12 weeks, no, I'm not surprised at all anymore.
Phil, it was year 2 for Tony Vitello as Tennessee's coach that he took the Volunteers to Fayetteville. Razorbacks won a shootout on Friday night, won a lopsided game on Saturday, and then the Hogs rallied late for the win and the sweep on Sunday. And now, 4 years into his tenure at Tennessee, what are your impressions of the Volunteers, and what's it like to see Vitello with Tennessee in the top 5 and playing host to top-ranked Arkansas this weekend?
Well, I mean, nobody is surprised. Nobody here in Arkansas that is a baseball fan is surprised that Tony's turned the Volunteer program around. I think anybody would be surprised that they've become this good in 4 years. But that's a testament to his ability to coach players up, to bring in good talent, and the coaches he has with him. You know, it's not just Vitello, it's also Josh Elander, who we got to know here, mm-hmm. and Luke Bonfield, who is one of the student managers, and he's still a favorite here, and everybody here in Fayetteville loves Luke. So we know how good those guys are as coaches in and of themselves. My impression is, I'm prepping on this Tennessee team, is they're kind of like the Razorbacks, but they're a little more established as far as who they trust on the pitcher's mound, certainly in the SEC. I mean, they've got 12 pitchers that have worked. Arkansas has worked 16 pitchers. And where you know who your starters are each weekend, Arkansas still doesn't quite know who's going to start game 3. I see a team that throws a lot of strikes, forces you to put the bat on the ball, might give up the long ball every once in a while, but the pitchers aren't going to beat themselves. I see a team that makes the plays in the field, and I see a lineup that has some depth and finds a lot of ways to get on base and utilizes speed. So I think I'm not going to say that Tennessee and Arkansas mirror each other, but I see a lineup that's dangerous in many ways, maybe even more so than it may be a more versatile lineup in the way that they use their speed and steal bases than Arkansas.
And the fact that each team has been outstanding this year in drawing walks, are you kind of setting the over and under at about 315 or so on game times?
Yeah, but the whole point here is that both pitching staffs now throw strikes. So
fair point.
You know, in order to get I mean, you guys just faced Missouri. Missouri, you know, has a lot of trouble finding the strike zone. This is a totally different pitching staff. So it's, that's going to be one of the fascinating things. You know, sometimes pitchers get scared out of the strike zone because they're facing a really good lineup. Sometimes pitchers just can't throw strikes. That's not necessarily the kind of staffs we're facing here. I don't think anybody's going to pitch scared. So, no, I'm not quite sure if we'll have these really long games or a bunch of walks, because these are two pitching staffs that are also going to force you to put the bat on the ball.
That's an excellent point. And has Coach Van Horn had anything to say yet? I mean, I don't know if you've asked him about him already, but or if that's going to be part of your pregame leading into Friday. But has Coach Van Horn had any comments about going up against a Tony-led team for the second time?
Not yet. I know he'll have, I think they'll do a media Zoom tomorrow, and I'm sure he'll be asked about it. There's another former assistant of his that also is a head coach in this league in Rob Childress, that the two of them are still very, very good friends. And Dave's told me, you know, that after all these years, he hates coaching against Rob Childress. Mm-hmm. I don't think he likes beating his good friend. He certainly doesn't like losing to him. That's the other aspect of it. So, you know, it's not, you know, Tony and Dave are two totally different people and at different stages of their lives and their careers. But I would tell you that I think Dave is fond of Tony and what he did to get this program where it was while he was here. And I think it's an amazing matchup of two guys. Tony Vitello is such an interesting coach. I don't know anybody else that, you know, has been as good of a pitching coach and as good of a hitting coach as he's been, plus being able to recruit out the yin yang and with so much energy, and to go to a place that hasn't been thought about as far as baseball is concerned in a long time and turn them rabid. Mm-hmm. It says a lot about him. It says a lot about him.
Phil, really appreciate the time. Always great to see you. Can't wait for you to get here. Safe travels. Look forward to seeing you at the ballpark on Friday. But thank you so much for joining us tonight.
It's my pleasure. I'll go on hold. You're producing. Take my number so I can ask those very, very important questions to Pete Rose, okay?
All right. Just hang on, and we'll get that taken care of.
All right, great. See you soon.
All right. Thank you very much. Phil Elson, who is the voice of Arkansas baseball as well as Arkansas women's basketball, joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. And once again, Jimmy, we head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline for a very special guest, as we've got a great tournament that kicks off tomorrow.
We do, and it is Bogle LaRue. He is qualified for the Visit Knoxville Open. There was qualifying at Three Ridges. There was a 64, then like six 66s, and there were six players vying for three spots. Bogle LaRue ended up qualifying, and he will be teeing it off tomorrow at Hoston Hills Country Club. Bogle, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you guys?
We're doing fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. And, hey, just tell us about how nerve-wracking it was to be in a six-person playoff for three spots.
I would say it was probably one of the most nervous times I've ever had on the golf course. There was, like you said, there were six of us, and there was three spots available. We were playing hole 16 in Three Ridges, which is a tough par three, and I hit it on the front of the green to the back left pin, and so I had about a 60-footer for birdie, and I hit it. I think I was the first one to go after we hit our tee shots, and I hit it about 5 feet by or so, which is a pretty good putt from where I was, and after a few of the guys had finished, there was three bogeys, and it came down to I had a 5-footer for par, and I knew if I made it, I was in the tournament, and I didn't really think about missing it. I think that's kind of a common thing people will do. I've luckily had some big putts I've made under pressure, and I always try and flash back to those. Not this past February, but the February before, I made about a 15 or 20 footer to help my team win a tournament down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And I always kind of try and flash back to that anytime I'm under pressure. But back to your question, though, I mean, I was super nervous. I was about to felt like I was about to pass out over the ball when I was about to hit my my putt to get in, but it was a good feeling. It's not something that you can get. You can't not be nervous, but you can be prepared to be nervous, I think is a good way to put it.
So that may be the most important five-footer you've ever made. Would that be fair to say?
I would probably say so.
Yeah. So did you like playing at Three Ridges? Is that a course where you typically have scored well?
It is. I like that course a lot. There's definitely a few goofy holes out there, but it's a good golf course. It's always in good shape. And I played really well there this past summer in the Knox County Amateur, and I shot 67 the final round. But I went out. In the qualifier, I started on the back nine and started out birdie, birdie, eagle, birdie, and that got me off to a really hot start, obviously, and then birdied a couple more on that side and went out with 29, which was my lowest nine holes I've ever shot. And so that was definitely different. I've never played that well there, but I played fine on my last nine, shot one over, which is, I think, all things considered, not too bad, and it worked out in my favor pretty well.
Well, you shot a 29 during the qualifying? Is that what you said?
I did. I started.
Wow.
I started on hole 10 with, I hit it to 3 feet and made a birdie there. Hit it to 7 or 8 feet on 11 and made birdie there. And then hole 12, I hit it to about 20, 25 feet and made that putt for eagle. And then the next hole on hole 13 is a short par three. I hit it to about 6 feet and made that. And that was obviously a pretty darn good start.
Absolutely.
And then I birdied 17 and then made a really good birdie on 18. And after that, I was like, man, I just shot 29. That was pretty darn good.
Yeah, absolutely. So did you grow up as a junior member at Houston Hills Country Club?
I did. I've been out there since I was in sixth grade, and my dad played there a long time ago, like in the early 2000s, and he doesn't really play much anymore, but I was always kind of around Holston a little bit growing up. I started playing at Gettysview Country Club, and I think that's a really good golf course for any junior around here to grow up on. It teaches you to hit it straight and hit some funky shots, but I've been at Holston Hills since I was in sixth grade, and I just graduated college about 2 weeks ago, so I've been up there a pretty long time.
Oh, you just graduated 2 weeks ago. Now, this is from Belmont, right?
Yes, Belmont University over in Nashville.
Yeah. So how did you end up from Bearden High School to Belmont?
So it's a pretty funny story, actually. I was playing the state junior over at the Legacy, which is up near Clarksville, over by Nashville. And my buddy Kyle Cottom, his uncle, is the athletic director at Belmont, and I had going into this tournament, I think I was the summer after my junior year of high school, I had never heard of Belmont before, and when I was playing the state junior over there that week, I saw Coach Flynn. I didn't know who he was. I saw him kind of following me around a little bit, and I saw the logo on his hat, which, I mean, back in junior golf, if you had a college coach following you, it was just the coolest thing. But I saw the logo on his hat, and I was riding back, and I didn't know what school it was, and I looked it up, and I sent Coach Flynn an email, and, I mean, I guess a few years later, I was playing golf for him, but I took a visit to the campus. I was looking at a few other schools, but I took a visit to the campus, and it just felt like a sign from God. As soon as I got on campus, it just felt like the right place to be.
So I'm sure you've never been asked this question before, but how did you get the first name of Bogle?
That's a good question. And, yeah, I get asked that all the time. And it's a family name. It's my great-grandmother's maiden name.
Great-grandmother's maiden name, okay.
Yes. Not after the wine. I get asked that a lot.
Yeah, but I can see that. You mentioned you just finished at Belmont, but somebody told me, see if this is right, that you're into custom woodwork. Is that true?
I am. Who told you that?
Source.
Okay, fair enough. I am. I kind of do it on the side. I started doing that about a year ago or so, and I've gotten pretty heavy into it. I wouldn't call it much of a business, but I kind of sell some cutting boards and stuff. And if you want to follow me, for anybody that's listening, it's JBL_woodworks on Instagram. So I'd appreciate a follow. I post some stuff on there all the time. And I was working on a couple cutting boards earlier today just to kind of take my mind off of the tournament and stuff.
Yeah. Outstanding. How would you rate how the Atlanta Falcons handled the draft?
I would call it I'd say probably about an 8.5 or 9 out of 10. I'm a little biased, but I think that their first pick, Kyle Pitts from Florida, even though he went to Florida, and us ball fans hate Florida, I think he's going to be a really good player, and I think the rest of the draft was pretty solid.
So I guess that you would be opposed to the notion that the Falcons might be exploring a trade for Julio Jones.
I would say he's my favorite Falcon ever, so it'd be tough to see him go, but based off their cap situation, they're not in the greatest spot, and I'd say football's kind of a business, and Julio's getting a little old, and if they can get a good trade out of him, I mean, it'd be hard to say no if they got a really good offer just because he's getting up there in age.
I don't profess to be a Falcons fan, but I do think they have some of the classic looks that the NFL has ever seen. Are you in the corner of the all-red jersey or the all-black jersey? I do think they need to get away of the shaded stuff that they brought on last year. But what is your favorite look for the Falcons?
I love the throwback black jerseys with the old logo. I think those are so cool. I like both of them, but if I had to pick one, I would definitely pick the throwback all black jerseys. Those are so cool. And I'm kind of with you. I'm not a huge fan of the kind of different shaded jerseys. I don't think they look too bad, but they're a little bit different, but I don't think they wore them too much last year. I think they only wore them for 2 or 3 games.
Our guest Bogle LaRue, he's qualified for the Corn Ferry Tour Visit Knoxville Open. Bogle, you've not played in a Corn Ferry event before, have you?
No, this Monday qualifier I played in was my second ever attempt at trying to get into a Monday, into a Corn Ferry event. So, no, I've not played in one. This is my second event as a professional golfer, and I was telling someone this earlier today, I think it's just the coolest thing that it's my first real big pro event, and it's at my home course. I don't think it could have really worked out a whole lot better than that.
As a Donald Ross course, there's some subtleties to it. Do you think the home course knowledge will benefit you?
I would say so. I mean, it's not a super tricky golf course, but, I mean, I've played out there hundreds of times, so that's definitely in my back pocket, and I'm definitely using that to my advantage. That definitely is going to help me out this week. And there's a few shots and a few holes that I think you had to have played a few times to be really comfortable over the shot. So I think it's definitely going to help me out this week, and I'm just really excited for it.
You're used to playing number 7 and number 17 as par 5s. Now they're par 4s. Your thoughts on that change?
I don't have any problem with it. I think it's fair. This time of year, there's not a whole lot of rough out at Holston Hills, so I think they're going to try and keep the score relative to par as low as they can. I played the State Am there back in 2015, and it was playing the same way. And, I mean, it's still a golf hole, and you still want to try and get it in as few shots as possible. Like, I was playing the practice round today, and on hole 7, I played early this morning, and it was cold, and the wind was blowing, and I hit a really solid driver and a really solid 3-wood and was about 30 yards short of the front edge, which is typically
– wow.
I'm used to hitting – like, I hit typically like a 6 or 5 iron, something like that, into that green, and today driver 3-wood wasn't enough. But I don't think it's going to play like that for the tournament, luckily. It was just – it was just happened to be really cold and dead into the wind today.
You tee off at 9:15 a.m. Do you like the idea of a morning tee time with, rather than waiting around for an afternoon tee time?
Personally, I don't have much of a preference on it. I do kind of like being early because that means I'll be done early and I can kind of do whatever I want the rest of the day. And that's why I went off early today, was because I wanted to get done early and come back and rest and not be out there all day before a morning tee time.
Sure. Okay. Hey, Bogle, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it. Congratulations on qualifying for the Korn Ferry Tour event, and good luck to you this weekend.
Thank you so much. Thank you guys for giving me a call.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Appreciate it, Bogle. Good luck.
Bogle LaRue, product of Bearden High School, played at Belmont, and his second attempt at a Korn Ferry event, he makes the cut and qualifies, so we'll see how he does. Again, he's going to tee off at 9:15 a.m. He's teeing off with a couple of players who got one that got an exemption. That's Cooper Musselman at 9:15 a.m., and then Albert Pistorius of Canada, who also I think may have been one of the qualifiers as well. But, again, our appreciation to Bogle LaRue for his time, and he'll be teeing it off tomorrow in the Visit Knoxville Open.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break and be back with a final segment to today's edition of Sports Talk. And we invite you to join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. Star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. And as we had our my friend Phil Elson join us to talk Razorbacks baseball and preview the upcoming series against the Volunteers, we put out the call for tickets for a night with Pete Rose. We say congratulations to Lucas, who was caller number 5 and gets a pair of tickets. We'll have more to give away tomorrow, as well as later in the week. We can tell you top of the second in Tuscaloosa, Lady Vols lead Texas A&M 1-0.
Good start. Ashley Rogers on the mound. She's had a great year. She leads the SEC in wins. She leads in strikeouts and has had a tremendous season for Tennessee. And for those that might have missed it, Lady Vols in golf, they don't advance to the national championship, but Michaela Bardwell shot a 66. That's the second low score of her career, and she tied for second. She advances to the national championship. She's one of only 6 Lady Vols to play in it as an individual. So congratulations for a fantastic performance by Michaela Bardwell.
And, Jimmy, tomorrow it'll be the first day of the Visit Knoxville Open, and you are going to be on the course. It should be a whole lot of fun.
I'm excited about it. The course is in great shape. Looking forward to seeing what they shoot. Should be a lot of fun to watch some of the best golfers, and there's still some of the best golfers in the world on this tour. Look forward to watching and see what they do at Holston Hills. Course is in great shape.
Yeah, and we'll have shows out there all day long, right?
Yes, we will, starting at 9 o'clock, ending at 7 p.m.
All right, so that'll be a whole lot of fun. Jimmy, have a great night.
John, you too.
Thank you. Softball is next.